Good morning. Under our constitutional form of government, our rights are protected by the separation of powers: judicial, executive, legislative. Our executive and legislative leaders are elected in partisan elections that draw a great deal of attention and publicity, and people are quite familiar with those. Our judicial department, which is a co-equal branch of government, the appointments are handled differently. In Missouri, judicial offices were subject to sharp partisanship in the 1920s and 30s, and it caused the people to adopt the Missouri Nonpartisan Court Plan in 1940. And under that plan, trial judges in the metropolitan areas of St. Louis and Kansas City, and our appellate judges at the Missouri Court of Appeals and the Missouri Supreme Court, are selected in a nonpartisan fashion. Nominees are submitted to the governor by a nonpartisan commission, and then the governor picks from those three. But there still is accountability. And the accountability comes from judges who are selected by the nonpartisan plan having to stand for retention elections periodically. The number of years in their term depends on which office they hold. With associate circuit judges, it's 4 years. With circuit judges, it's six. And the Supreme Court has 12-year terms, and appellate judges have 12-year terms. But nevertheless, they are accountable to the voters, and also they are accountable at the first general election after their appointments. The issue, though, that we have to deal with, and that we are dealing with this morning, is how judges remain accountable to the people for what they do and how they can be held accountable on merit factors. And judges, we believe, should be judged by whether they make their decisions based upon applicable law, whether they treat all who come before them equally, whether they explain their decisions clearly, whether they manage their dockets efficiently, and whether they conduct themselves in a proper manner on and off the bench. My name is Dale Dierhoff. I'm the coordinator for the Missouri Judicial Performance Evaluation Committees. I'm an attorney here in Jefferson City. With me is Don Brzozowski, who's the vice chair of the Appellate Judicial Performance Evaluation Committee. He is a social studies chair and teacher at Arcadia Valley High School. We are glad that we have the partnership between the attorneys and citizens like Don Brzozowski, because in our Judicial Performance Evaluation Committee system that we have and have had since 2008, we have an equal number of non-lawyers to lawyers doing these evaluations. We believe that's important, that the citizens have non-lawyer input as well as lawyer input. We also have citizen input by having judicial evaluations done by jurors. What we are looking for are informed opinions that can then be communicated to the voters to help the voters make a decision when they go to the polls in November to decide whether to retain a particular judge. Just as an aside, not all counties in Missouri are under the nonpartisan court plan. The counties under the plan are St. Louis, St. Louis County, Jackson, Platt, Clay. Greene County opted in recently. So in the other counties of Missouri, judges are still elected on partisan ballots, and the philosophy behind that difference that goes back to the creation of the plan in 1940 is that in rural, less populated areas, individual judges are better known to the people. They can make up their own minds based upon knowledge, personal knowledge of the judges, even though they're running on a partisan ticket. And in outstate Missouri, we have found very little partisanship, frankly. It goes to whether those judges are doing a good job based upon the factors I just mentioned. But in the metropolitan areas or more populous areas such as Greene County, there isn't the same opportunity for the voters to become personally acquainted with the judges, and that's why the nonpartisan court plan applies to those more populated counties. Other counties can opt in if they care to do so, but at the present time I've identified those counties that are under the nonpartisan court plan. Missouri is one of 18 jurisdictions with a modern judicial performance evaluation program. It was created by Missouri Supreme Court rule in 2008 after Judge Wolf, who was then the Chief Justice, had made a call that we expand the sources of information we use to evaluate nonpartisan judges. The Missouri Bar, though, has been involved in judicial performance evaluations since 1948. So the people adopted the nonpartisan plan in 1940, and already beginning in 1948, the bar began doing surveys of judges and providing information to voters about advice of lawyers on whether to retain or not retain a particular judge. Over the years, two judges have not been retained by the voters after they had a do not retain recommendation by the lawyers. Over the years, our program has been expanded to include more information. Originally, the question was merely, should this judge be retained or not retained? Now we have expanded, particularly since 2008, to bring Missouri into line with modern judicial performance evaluation programs that have input from various sources. And we participate, by the way, in a monthly conference call with the Institute for the Advancement of the American Legal System in Denver, Colorado, and share information with other states that have JPE programs in order to keep Missouri current with best practices for how we evaluate our judges. This morning, we are releasing information to the public. That includes brochures on how we judge the judges in Missouri, a voter's guide to nonpartisan judges seeking retention in the November 6, 2012 general election. We have the outstate edition, which has recommendations on the Supreme Court, Missouri Courts of Appeals in the Eastern District, Western District, and Southern District. We also have brochures available for Greene County about recommendations on the trial judges who are on the ballot in Greene County. There are three. We have the Kansas City Area Edition, in which we have not only the Supreme Court and Court of Appeals, but the four judges from the 6th Judicial Circuit, three judges, trial judges from the 7th Judicial Circuit, and the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 judges from the 16th Judicial Circuit, which is Jackson County, the recommendations of the committees. We also have the St. Louis Area Edition, which is the voter's guide to nonpartisan judicial elections in St. Louis and St. Louis counties. And again, the judges who are on the retention ballot there are named with the recommendations of the committees from those particular jurisdictions. Also in the brochure, we are providing evaluation numbers to show the criteria upon which these judges have been evaluated and the manner in which they've been evaluated. These criteria have been developed over a period of a number of years, again, adopting best practices that have been developed in other states and also by experts on evaluation methods to do this in the most positive way, to keep the focus on merit factors and to not allow judges to be unfairly judged based upon the results of a particular case or based on some narrow ideological matter. Judges can be assured that when they decide cases that they then will be evaluated on merit factors. And by the way, Missouri judges are very hardworking. It comes as a surprise to most people that the Missouri judicial branch decides approximately 400,000 civil and criminal cases every year. They do it very efficiently with only a small part of the operating budget of the state. The dockets are current, and more information about that is available on the Office of State Court Administrator website. So overall, we believe that the judges have been doing an excellent job, and that is reflected in these evaluations that we are releasing this morning. We're not only releasing these in paper form, but they're also being released electronically, and they're available on websites that we will talk about in a minute. I would also like to just very briefly mention how the judicial performance evaluation process works, because it's not very well publicized otherwise. After every general election, we meet among our various judicial performance evaluation committees. These are 12-person committees made up of 6 lay people and 6 lawyers in each of these jurisdictions that has nonpartisan elections, as well as one for the statewide appellate judges. And I'll let Don Barzowski speak to that in a moment. But after every election, we evaluate to see what we could do better. We ask the judges what they think we could do to do better. We ask the citizens, and then we make changes as needed, and we're prepared to do that again after this election if anybody has any constructive comments to add. But in February of this year, we had our orientation meetings. Then in March 1st, we submitted electronic ballots to the lawyers and to jurors. We also mailed these surveys to jurors who had served on juries in front of these nonpartisan judges. On March 31st, we had electronic lawyer survey deadline. We compiled the information. I won't go through all the deadlines, but nevertheless, we submitted these to the judges It gave them an opportunity to appeal, and then today is when we release them pursuant to Supreme Court rule. All of this is being done within the context of a judicial performance evaluation system that was created by the Supreme Court in 2008 pursuant to Supreme Court rule, which our Supreme Court has the constitutional authority to do under the judicial article of our Missouri Constitution. I would like to ask Don if he would please speak to the citizen input and sort of his view of this process.
Well, I think this process is just the fine-tuning of an already excellent system for choosing judges in Missouri, and I think it's highly evident by the data we have available to us that we just have good judges in Missouri. That's all there is to it. I guess the story here is there is no story, because we look at nine judges. I've looked at about, 30 judges over the last 6 years. We have not had any major issues with judges being rated by their peers or by lawyers. Judges' improprieties, absolutely there's been none of that. But just the judges' reading of the law and fairness and availability to make good decisions for the people of Missouri has just bowled me over, because I'm a government teacher, obviously, and a student of government as well. But, you know, the judicial branch is sort of sometimes the forgotten branch. It's the branch that's hardest to get information on. We don't have interaction with the judicial branch unless we're in trouble or unless we have some sort of contentious legal battle with someone. So people sort of tend to forget about it, but it's very important, especially as our communities and our government, or our state and federal government becomes a little bit more contentious. So I feel very confident and fortunate living in Missouri under this judicial system that we have arranged over the last 40 or 60, 70 years now. And like I said, the judicial performance evaluation committees are just a fine-tuning to an already excellent system. And I really want to applaud the Missouri Bar for including lay people in the formation of these committees. I think that the lawyers may have been a little bit leery of it at first that we served the committees with, but they have grown to greatly appreciate our input, and we greatly appreciate the interaction with the lawyers in evaluating these judges.
And I want to express gratitude on behalf of the Missouri Bar as well as the Judicial Performance Evaluation Committees to the 84 women and men who serve without pay on these appellate and circuit evaluation committees, 42 lawyers, 42 citizens. They take this their responsibilities very seriously, and they work hard, and the product of what they do is shown in our evaluations that we're releasing today. I'd also like to mention that this is all done at no cost to the taxpayers. We do not use general revenue. The Missouri Bar provides staff support and facilities, pays for if there's any facilities needed, but other than that, the people serve without pay, and it takes people like Mr. Barzowski here to really make this work, and we appreciate that very much. An effective performance evaluation system for judges has to really address three elements. One, we have to collect information about judicial performance based upon merit factors. Two, we have to evaluate that information. And three, we have to disseminate that information so the people who vote in November can have it available when they go in the polls. How well we do this job is reflected in voter participation in judicial retention elections. The experts in judicial performance evaluation programs use voter participation as an indication of whether a JPE program is working, as opposed to whether or not the voters follow a particular recommendation, because what we've found is that voter participation is increased if the voters feel as if they have enough information to make an informed vote. And what the experts look for is what they call roll-off. It's the difference between the vote for the top of the ticket, whether it's the governor or a senator running at the top of the state ticket, versus who votes on the judges. And in other states that have JPE programs, Colorado, this roll-off figure dropped from 31% to 26% when they started doing these evaluations. In New Mexico, the roll-off dropped from 31% to 27%, and that means 77% of people were voting. What we have in Missouri, we started with a pretty high number because, as I said, the Missouri Bar has been doing evaluations and recommendations since 1948. In 2000, 79% of the voters who voted for the top of the ticket also voted in retention elections at the top of the ticket. In 2004, we raised that to 81%. When we adopted our new JPE program in 2008, that increased to 83%. And in 2010, our voter participation in judicial retention elections, comparable races, 84%. So that means only 16% of Missouri voters feel as if they're uninformed to the point they don't bother to cast the ballot on the judicial retention election. And this is where we hope the dissemination of this information through the press and through the thousands of copies of these brochures we're going to disseminate across Missouri in libraries, courthouses, and also make this available online either at the Missouri Bar website or on the Mo Courts website that we're releasing today. And we want to keep people informed so that they, when they go in the polls, they will feel as if they are knowledgeable enough that they can vote in these retention elections and ultimately hold our judges accountable for these merit factors that we all focus on. Those are the comments I would like to make, but we're here to answer questions.
Bill, the only judge I noticed that was not recommended to be retained is Dale Hood.
I believe that's correct.
Why? Why was he recommended not to be retained?
Because the Judicial Evaluation Committee in St. Louis County that met and considered the evaluations by the lawyers and evaluations by the jurors, and also I think they evaluate written opinions, came to the conclusion that he should not be retained.
But why not retain him?
I think you have to look at all of the factors that they have listed, and I don't know whether you
because
have that.
We don't have that. We just have the brochure that says do not retain, but we don't have.
It would be online.
We don't have this handout that has the scoring chart on it.
Well, and I would just mention that there is a press conference in St. Louis right now where they were focusing on that particular issue. And I know you're here, and we'll get that information to you. But and we will get that to you today. But I would like to refer you to the actual evaluation criteria rather than try to unfairly maybe summarize it in a way that the committee maybe would prefer that I just refer to what the evaluation criteria were.
Is there a threshold that has to be achieved to be retained? For example, on these ranking systems here that scored 1 through 5, you have to get a certain number to be retained?
You know, when we first started this, there was no threshold, and then one of the criticisms after 2008 was the judges said they would prefer that we have a threshold so they would know generally what that would be, and I think it's
2.75. 2.75, and is that what you have to get on the lawyer survey?
The cumulative lawyer survey.
All right, so the peer survey of, I guess, assume that means other judges. The peer survey doesn't factor into that.
It hasn't. Let me comment on the peer survey. This is the first year we've done the peer survey. It's one of the innovations we're testing this time. We'll see how that goes. We haven't done this before. Other states have done peer surveys. Some others have decided not to do it. On balance, our committees voted that they would like to see peer surveys done. So we're doing that this time. But the 2.75 factor was decided upon before we had the peer numbers. And so, no, I don't think the peer numbers go into the 2.75.
Okay. So I know there's also, you mentioned the survey of jurors, right?
Correct.
That doesn't factor into this retention. Let's say you have a 3.0 ranking as a judge from the lawyers, but the jurors all thought you were terrible. You would still be retained because you have a 3.0?
No.
No?
I don't think so. So far we haven't really had that example that you just gave. It would be hard to conceive that somebody would be that that inept with the jurors. But I think we view the lawyer survey as informed opinion, and it's something that we've been collecting for decades, and that's a factor that I think the committees took into consideration when they decided they would use the 2.75 as at least an indicator. if they decide in the future that there should be weight also given to juror evaluations, I suppose we could add that. But the problem we have with giving too much weight to juror evaluations and the ultimate decision about whether to recommend retain or not retain is that some judges are in divisions that don't have juries.
Right.
They're in a domestic relations docket, or they're in a an adult abuse docket, and judges who do more jury trials and jury evaluations, by the way, tend, so far we have found, to be quite favorable. It would give those judges maybe a skewed number if they had or didn't have jury evaluations in there. So we tried really hard to have judges evaluated on the same basis across the board, and the one common thing we do have are lawyer evaluations. Those are the informed lawyer evaluations, but we don't have jury evaluations for all the trial judges.
So flip that around then. Lawyer evaluation comes back as a 2.5. Jurors think he's great, but he's below the 2.75 threshold, so he would get a do not retain recommendation.
I think so.
Okay.
I think so, because jurors may not know about the reasons why the lawyers gave a low recommendation. You know, the juror may not know that the judge is misapplying the law.
So
might be a good politician, but a terrible judicial mind. Who knows?
It strikes me that we have jurors looking at the performance of the judge, and we have a review panel that looks at these evaluations and surveys that come in and looks at it all. But it seems like it really all just boils down to the number from the lawyer's evaluation as far as the do not retain or retain recommendation.
It's not supposed to be that way, and I don't think it is that way. I think we have independent judgment being exercised by these committees. The judges wanted us to give them a number that if they were below that, they would know they were in trouble, and if they were above it, that they were probably okay. But it's still up to those 12 people on that judicial retention committee, the Judicial Performance Evaluation Committee for that jurisdiction, to make the final decision about whether to recommend to retain or not retain.
But there's no examples where you were either above and they were recommended not to retain, or below and they were recommended to retain.
We haven't had that happen.
Okay.
Does the committee, do the committee members see things that the general public doesn't see in these final surveys, or do you get to see written comments or something that help explain why the lawyers, particularly the lawyers, would have had their opinion that you then get to weigh and modify?
We don't see anything that wouldn't be available to people if they ask for it. These lawyer surveys are available. The Missouri Bar, if I'm correct, Missouri Bar makes these available. The peer surveys are new. I work closely with one of the people on my committee, Joe Blanton, and he's a lawyer. And we ask the judges to provide five opinions.
Appellate judges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, I'm kind of on the Cadillac committee because we don't have to deal with juror surveys or anything like that, because we deal with well-vetted, very excellent judges who've already been through the process. So we go and look at more opinions than the five. Anybody's able to go up and look at judges' opinions if they so choose to.
So if I'm up for retention, you ask me to give you five, I'm going to give you five of my best, but the committee can go back through the whole library of opinions and find others that maybe lawyers are telling you that opinion that Watson wrote was terrible and you need to look at it.
And, me and Joe look specifically at Judge Witt in very detail, and we looked up 20 and we looked at split decisions and so on.
I have a couple of questions about this process in terms of the current political climate relative to the court plan. You indicated that the assessment of the roll-off is attributed to voters becoming more informed and taking more of an interest in the down ballot issues such as judicial retention. How do we not know that that is just a response to the activism surrounding the court plan and becoming interested in making decisions about judges where you weren't interested in doing that before?
Well, because that phenomenon was tracked in other states where they did not have controversy over the court plan, where they found that as they provided more information to judges, that the voters had a higher level of participation.
So you're confident that that is...
Oh, sure, but...
totally independent of the political debate.
Well, I don't know that I would use totally dependent. Anytime you have people talking about a judicial retention election, Obviously, it increases awareness, and we like that. It's good that people are focused on retention elections, no matter which way they vote. And I can't say that it's not a factor, but as I said, we looked at that after we had information from other states where the roll-off decreased after they adopted a modern JPE program and where they did not have controversy over whether they should have a nonpartisan court plan or not. So it's a phenomenon that has been documented in other states. And so we believe it exists in Missouri as well.
Don, if I can turn to you, in the same arena, you represent the non-lawyer input in this process. And non-lawyer input is at the focus of the debate on the nonpartisan court plan. Have you noticed any change in reaction to what you do, or interest in what you do, or pressure on what you do, given the political debate?
I have not. The one thing I would say that probably also contributes to the increase in the roll-off, or the decrease in the roll-off, however you may say it. The Missouri Bar has been very good over the last 4 to 6 years about getting this information out and publishing it. I know my local paper, I think it's you who does the articles, right, that sends out, Keith?
Gary Toohey.
And Gary, I've seen those over the last 4 to 6 years where those didn't exist before. And these pamphlets, I see these in places now in the local library and stuff where we didn't see them before. So I think, you know, especially the local library, you're sitting there and then you pick this up and say, oh, I've got to vote for judge. And they read this and then now they have some information where they would have absolutely no information. But no, the court plan debate has not reached Iron County yet, I would say, at least, you know, in my school district or at my courthouse.
So you have no sense that people expect more from you, or that they maybe don't trust your opinion as independent of the lawyers in this process?
I have only received comments about how they from the people that I have received comments about how they appreciate this addition to the process, and how they admire my role in the process, and the people I do, you know, hang out with, so to speak, are interested, and we talk about the process, and so I have no pressure. I haven't had in my dealings with the committee. There's always this fear in the beginning: judges are going to be calling us up at home and putting. Have never had any of that. Never had any problems with judges' reaction to our scrutiny of them.
We were talking yesterday, and our memory is that 2 years ago, you had a do not retain recommendation for a judge in the St. Louis, a trial level judge in the St. Louis area, and the voters retained that judge anyway.
Right.
So these recommendations really don't mean anything, do they?
As I said, there have been two judges not retained after there was a recommendation to not retain. In that particular case, the retention vote was close. If you look at the actual vote, there was an impact, but ultimately we believe it's up to the voters to make their own decision, which they did in that case. And we also view the process as an opportunity for the judges to improve. And because we give them the criteria that they're judged on, whether they're fair and impartial, whether they write opinions that are clear, all the things that you see in these evaluation lists, and a judge can take heart from that, and hopefully he or she will have an opportunity to improve themselves if they are retained on a close vote. Maybe next time they come out as a better judge.
I'm having some trouble getting my hands around the jury recommendations, since they're not included here and since they're spotty because some judges don't have juries. What use are they in this process, and to whom are they useful?
I know that the judicial performance evaluation committees in those circuits, such as St. Louis County, St. Louis, Greene County, Platte, Clay, Jackson, do look at the jury evaluations. It is just one other opportunity to get to know more about how the judge interacts, in this case, with citizens, and to give the citizens an opportunity to express themselves. It probably goes to the self-improvement aspect of our JPE program. And I would imagine that if we ever had a situation where we had some very negative jury comments, that the JPE committee from that jurisdiction could take that in consideration in whether to ultimately have a do not retain vote. That hasn't happened, but it could. I think the jury evaluations are also important in terms of how the entire court system delivers its product. If jurors are not comfortable with how they're selected or how they're treated once they're in the process, they'll let us know that. And the presiding judges in each circuit also can receive that information and make adjustments to do a better job of delivering judicial services if that's required. So far, the jury evaluations have been, on the whole, very positive.
Do you do any kind of a breakout on your studies here on the basis of the plaintiffs and defendants' lawyers? Do you see, it's just the lawyers who practice generally. But is there a difference between the plaintiff's reaction, the plaintiff bar reaction, and the defense bar reaction of these judges?
No. We do not have lawyers categorize themselves when they do their evaluations as to whether they think they're plaintiffs or defendants or something in between. No, we don't.
Should we have some factor that would give the public a sense that Judge Blow always sides with the plaintiffs or always sides with the defense?
Well, that's a different question, and that could come out in a judicial evaluation result, because there is a criteria for whether the judge is impartial. And if a judge does that, if the judge tries to skew the scales of justice, the lawyers who are on the downside of that issue, you could be sure we would be hearing from them. So that is already something that would show up. We don't, though, in the Missouri Bar, view our 30,000 members as either plaintiff or defendant lawyers. That's something that in Jefferson City, maybe over in the Capitol, they talk about more than exists in outstate Missouri. The great, great number of lawyers I know are just serving people and trying to deliver their legal needs. And whether they happen to be on one side of the V or the other in a particular lawsuit is sometimes just by chance. For example, in a dissolution case, I don't know that you can say that one side or the other is a plaintiff or a defense lawyer because both sides have issues, and the same is true with a landlord-tenant case, or the same is true with a commercial law case. Frequently you have claims and counterclaims. So while it might appear that the plaintiff-defense dichotomy is something interesting over in the Capitol, out there among the 30,000 lawyers, it's really not something that we consider as a label, and certainly wouldn't want to force lawyers to categorize themselves in order to be able to evaluate a judge. And as I said, if there is any skewing based upon some kind of ideological basis such as that, it would already show up in our evaluations that lawyers do of judges.
What do you consider a good score?
I think you have to ultimately look at the recommendation of whether to retain or not retain.
But a 2.75 is right on the bubble of retain and not retain, so I would look at that and say, well, that's adequate, right? But I don't know if you call that.
So I'm a teacher, and, in my mind, I was thinking about this 2 years ago, and then again this, a 4 through 5 is four an A for
okay.
me. So a 3 through 4 would be a B. Now, when you're getting down into the 2 range, you're getting the C range. And then you have to start thinking, is that what you want, is C judges? So that's sort of how I frame it in my mind. I want to answer your question real quickly. The committees don't really see themselves as kingmakers or spoilers in the sense that we should be telling people how to vote. We just have more detailed information that we comb over and like to present to the people in a format that is understandable. And maybe the only chance they'll get to look at a judge. I think maybe we should have a Congressional Performance Evaluation Committee, though, or a General Assembly Performance Evaluation Committee, but that's not for this organization to decide.
But critics of the plan in general have argued that retention votes really are meaningless because they come after the judge has been sitting a while, that this information is at best confusing to folks who don't follow the courts on a regular basis, and this is a lot of talk about something that Joe Sixpack doesn't pay a lot of attention to, may not care about other than when they actually cast a vote?
I guess you could flip that question on its head and say, what if we didn't have retention votes? How would judges behave? I know two judges I would say closely, one appellate and just one a presiding judge, and they are constantly considering not how their decisions are going to affect their retention vote necessarily, but how it's going to present themselves as a professional and a reflective judge and someone who's doing what they're supposed to do. And I think retention votes are always in the back of their mind, though.
So and even your partisan, because your presiding judge, I assume, is it a partisan
it is.
Contest
it
in,
is.
In the Iron County
yes.
area. Is concerned more about the public perceiving him or her as a professional as opposed to how I'm going to do in the next election?
Absolutely. And, you know, they say it's partisan in Iron County, but really, you know, you have a small pool of professional lawyers to choose from, and he doesn't really play as big of a role as you might think in Iron County. It may in other small rural counties, but not in Iron County.
When you said, does it really matter to Joe Sisbach, the fact that we have 84% of the people who vote on a part of the ticket still stay with us and vote one way or the other on a retention election to us is very heartening. It means that it does mean something to them, and it's increased as we provide more information to the voters. And I agree with Don. What are the alternatives? One alternative under the federal system is judges appointed for life. They're never then accountable in a retention election even. The people of Missouri decided they did not want to do that. Some states do that. Another way would be to have partisan elections even at the top of the ticket statewide. And in states that have done that, there's a lot of money now, particularly after the Citizens United decision, where millions of dollars flow into these judicial elections. And we have the unfortunate perception that justice can be for sale, and that's a terrible perception. We don't have that in Missouri, and as long as we have the nonpartisan plan, we won't have that. And that's what we're trying to preserve is our Missouri plan, which has been followed in some form or another in up to 30 other states. We want to preserve that in Missouri and continue to keep the focus on the merit factors that judges should be judged by and not financial or political factors. By the way, David, you'd ask about the individual evaluations.
Yeah.
I'd like to mention that those are all available right now online at www.showmecourts.org. That's a Missouri Bar website. That also, you can link to www.mobar.org to get information about these particular evaluations. We also, I wanted to mention one other thing and maybe even get input from the reporters here, and that is the timing of these releases. We have to strike a balance. We want to get it close enough to the election that it's relevant, but we've learned in the past that if you wait too long and get too close, that we get drowned out. There will be hundreds of millions of dollars spent this year on the presidential election, tens of millions of dollars apparently on the other statewide elections like for governor or for Senate. And as you get close to that November election date, it's hard to have any attention then on this retention information. And on balance, we have found that we thought announcing it in early September was a good time. The voters are thinking about how they might vote in November, but they're not yet completely overwhelmed by all the information coming in about executive branch and legislative branch elections. So that's why we do it now, and we hope we're providing enough information and making it available enough that people can then absorb it between now and the first Tuesday of November.
I have a couple of
questions.
Is this information ever used by the Judicial Commission or the Commission on Judicial Retirement, Discipline, Removal? Does this kind of evaluation ever get plugged into their considerations when they've got somebody who complains about a judge?
Not to my knowledge. They've never asked for it from me, and I'm the state coordinator. I don't know of any time that they've asked for that. They have a different role, and they use different factors. And they are very important in maintaining our court plan as well, because it's another way that judges are held accountable.
If I'm a judge, I'll just open up and pick up one here, and I see that the lawyers in my court have given me a 4.11 on making reasoned decisions based on law and facts. Or maybe even something lower. What role does this play in a judge's own self-assessment of his own behavior and whether he feels like he needs to improve on something to please the people who are in front of him? How much should this weigh in his thinking about whether he wants to try to get a higher value from the people who practice, or should he care?
In hearing back from the judges, they care. They really care, and they watch these numbers. I always encourage them not to place too much emphasis on the decimal fractions, the 100ths, and whether their peer got a 4.12 and they got a 4.11. It's not really that fine. These are evaluations that are on a sliding scale, as you can see, and the evaluators are told to evaluate the judges based upon whether, to the extent to which they fulfill these criteria. And so whether it's a 4 rating or a 5 rating, that's a matter of judgment. If I were a judge, I certainly would be concerned if I had a significant number of lawyers giving me a 1 or a 2 on a particular subject, and I think I would focus on improving myself in that area. But whether it's a 4 or 5, frankly, I try to encourage them not to worry about that very much. But they do. They watch it. Of course they do. And if I'm a judge and I see that my rating on a particular subject is a little bit lower than my peers, will I take that in consideration and try to do a better job? You bet I will.
If I'm down in the 3s on some of these things, does the Missouri Bar have any handbooks, programs, guides, or whatever that I can go to see what I might be able to do to improve myself in the eyes of the people that practice before me?
No, the Missouri Bar doesn't do that. The Supreme Court does have the Missouri Judicial College, and I've taught there. And others teach there. And if there's some subject that the court or the faculty, frankly, of the college thinks needs to be addressed, they will do that, and they'll add a program for that. That's mostly where judges get the word, but the Missouri Bar doesn't get involved in. I mean, judges can go to our CLE programs.
Certainly. Yeah, we have hundreds of continuing legal education programs across the state. Many judges attend those on whatever topic. If they perceive a deficiency in any area of the law, there are hundreds of programs that they are welcome to attend to enhance their knowledge in that area.
What sometimes happens, and it's more of a problem in the large metropolitan areas, is that the judges are rotated through different divisions, different activities, and so if you happen to draw 2 years on the domestic docket, you're going to have a lot of unhappy people, no matter which way you rule, because that's just a very contentious subject. If you happen to draw a docket where you have a couple personal injury cases and you have jury evaluations and lawyers who think you've done a great job on that, then you'll get a higher rating than those disgruntled people that had to go through the domestic relations docket. And that just happens. And that's why we have the 12-person evaluation committees as the final jury, so to speak, on whether to make a retain or do not retain recommendation, because those numbers can be affected by the type of cases that judge is assigned to hear.
You have you talk about the 2.75 score as being kind of the threshold. That's a composite of these average ratings.
It is. Here, right? It's a composite.
But that composite is not calculated, and so presumably it's not being told to the voters. Should that be publicized to the voters so that they have some idea about whether someone who has been recommended to be retained is in the A range or in the C plus range?
Colorado has a very modern JPE program, and a couple years ago, it might have been 3 or 4 years ago, but their chair told me that they did those composites. And then when they released their results, the story was all about who's the best judge in the state and who's the worst judge in the state, even though it was a retained recommendation, and it became a horse race. The composite numbers turned into a media horse race, and they thought it detracted from the overall program because judges were getting a call, do you know you're the best judge in the state? And others were saying, do you know you're the worst judge? And they quit doing it. And they recommended to other JPE programs that they not do it. Now, you could do it. I mean, you could just take a calculator, and you can calculate your own composite if you want to. But we are not releasing the list of judges based on their composite rating. They just recommended we not do that, and I understand why.
You use it internally to help make the decision.
We don't use it in the sense I just described, where we take everybody's composite and compare one to the other. The only thing we have is the 2.75, because the judges overall said they would like to know if there was a number that they were in danger of getting a do not retain recommendation if they fell below that number. And then we did that. If in the future, in the wisdom of the committees, they decide that that's not useful, I guess we could change it or adjust it. But that's the result of having been asked by some of the judges. They would kind of like to know what the number would be. But we don't do composite numbers on a whole list, as I've just described, for the reasons I've just told you.
Is that composite threshold, is that slightly different this time around? I seem to recall that last time it was slightly higher. It
should be the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I might stand corrected. I might have to ask Gary about that. I thought it was the same.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Okay.
So looking at that composite and the lawyer's ranking, I think it sounds accurate to describe this retention or do not retain vote as being based largely on the composite score of the lawyer's ranking. I know there's a review committee that looks at it after the fact, but it's sort of boiling it down. It seems to be the case, right?
The ultimate decision is made by the review committee, and they have the full authority to look at, like with the trial courts, they look at the juror evaluations and they look at the opinions, at least three trial judge opinions. They, even if they want to, can go talk to the judge or view courtroom behavior. And it might look like, because you're looking at the 2.75, that it's all about lawyer evaluations, but it's not. And so far we haven't had a situation where the lawyer evaluations were high and all those other factors were low, but it's my belief that if there would be such a situation, that the Judicial Performance Evaluation Committee for that particular jurisdiction could well vote out a do not retain recommendation based on those other factors if they, in their wisdom, chose to do so. And that's how the modern JPE programs are supposed to work. There's supposed to be that human element in it with citizen input equal to the lawyer input for the final determination.
Here in out-state Missouri, depending on which county I live in, I'm going to vote for a Supreme Court judge.
Right.
And up to 4 appeals court judges.
Correct.
The information you're giving us, the performance evaluations are based primarily on the informed opinions of attorneys who have argued cases in front of these judges. But attorneys arguing cases at either the appellate level or certainly down the block at the Supreme Court level, not that big a pool. How much reliability can I give to the opinions of a handful of professionals who deal with appellate law in terms of telling me how good or bad these judges really are?
Well, Bob, the goal is to have informed opinions. Everybody can have an opinion, okay? And we work very hard to make sure that the opinions, the evaluations that get into this system are informed opinions. So if it turns out that there are fewer people with interaction with the Missouri Supreme Court, but they have informed opinions, we want to know what those are. If you would just do a random, not a random, if you would just do an across-the-board evaluation where lawyers who had never even been in that court and didn't really know those judges and hadn't seen them perform and never read an opinion were allowed to express an evaluation that would be given equal weight to those who know, then it wouldn't be a very reliable system, I do not believe. So I understand the point that is in your question, but the alternative is not very good. When we went into this, both St. Louis and Kansas City bar associations would filter the names of the lawyers who could be allowed to participate, and they used in order to try to make sure that that they had lawyers who were actually knowledgeable about particular judges, and they were not consistent in how they would do it on the west and east side of the state, and we ultimately had to come to an agreement on how it would be done, and the lawyer now cannot vote on a judge unless that lawyer certifies that they have personal knowledge sufficient to make these evaluations. And as a result, you don't have as many people casting votes, as we would say, on these evaluations, but we believe that we have more informed evaluations as a result.
Judge Draper, for instance, has been on the court barely a year. long enough to be on the retention ballot. But at least in the hearings that I've sat in on, which is admittedly tiny, he has not been an active participant in the questioning that occurs in oral arguments. My question is, when you're dealing with one judge out of seven, how easy or difficult is it for a lawyer who's been there in the arguments and been there in writing the briefs and all that to still figure out how Judge Draper rates compared with the other six in order to get an evaluation?
There are two things. One, the voters decided that the judge who was appointed in the nonpartisan plan had to stand for a retention election at the next general election. So we are faced with a short timeline in that respect that's beyond our control. And then the question is, what kind of information can we provide the voters knowing that it's short? With Judge Draper, since you mentioned him, luckily, we have a very good record of how he performs as an appellate judge because he was on the Court of Appeals Eastern District, and he had very, very high ratings there, and a lot of lawyers had an opportunity to interact with him there. So his performance as an appellate judge is pretty well known. Maybe I'll also let my companion here speak to this as well, since you were on the Appellate Judicial Evaluation Committee.
Well, it would be difficult, certainly, to judge the judge. But I guess it would be even more difficult for me over in Ironton to have any knowledge of how Judge Draper performed, except for reading his decisions, which he may have only written one or two, and maybe concurred with seven or eight, and you don't know what his input on was. So it would be difficult. And I would agree, what's the alternative? We have just random anecdotes about Judge Draper, so at least we have, that's the information we have to go on. I believe that it's not the best system, or it's not a perfect system, but I think it's probably the best system that we can hope for.
It's driven by the short time limit, and also you have the opportunity to read at least five of his opinions and more if you care to, and you had particular members of your committee assigned to look at a number of his opinions. And so that's the product of what an appellate judge does, and I think it was an informed opinion.
I would say that, to one of your earlier questions, we're fortunate to have the lawyers on the committee because your question about, red flags that might come up about judges. We have very excellent lawyers, I think accomplished lawyers. I think that's why they were chosen on our committees. And if there's red flags, these lawyers sort of bring them to us. And we do have the opportunity to go to their courtroom and dig deeper if we think we need to. On my committee, we've never had the occasion to do that. We've just had excellent candidates. So,
what effect do you anticipate that the court plan vote in November will have on judicial retention?
Amendment 3.
I don't know. I don't know that. I just don't know.
In your long-standing term as a practicing lawyer, do you think voters will discriminate retention votes versus Amendment 3 votes, or do you think there's a good chance that they'll approach them both the same? Or is that another I don't know?
Probably I don't know. If I had to speculate, I would think that if they feel comfortable with information they're being given to make a retention vote, then hopefully they'll be satisfied with the way the Missouri plan is now working and they decide not to change it because we think it is working very well and we hope they don't change it. But we feel it's our responsibility to help keep them informed under the way it presently works so they can make intelligent retention votes.
This goes back to the question I had earlier about participation. With the increased participation, have you noticed any changes in the margins of difference between retain and don't retain in voting patterns?
Overall, I think the retention vote is going up, the do retain. And again, when I go to the Institute for the Advancement of the American Legal System and listen to the experts on this, they tell me that you have a core of approximately 30% of the voters who are going to vote no on every judge. Okay? You start out with that. That means that if we have 4% participation, you're likely to have more of a counterweight against that basic 30% vote. It also means that a judge to be retained has to do a really good job of getting the confidence of the people to get at least a 50% retention vote. And our judges are getting considerably higher retention votes than that in spite of this basic negative vote that's going to be built in every retention election.
Because we are in a certain anti-judge climate in terms of the political discourse. And to the extent that people have gotten interested who weren't interested before, they've gotten interested on that side.
Yeah, I don't think it's anti-judge at the local level.
I would agree.
Yeah. It might be that that's the attention at a very high level, but at the local level, because this is where people get their justice dispensed to them, those 400,000 cases I mentioned, it's amazing the high level of satisfaction we have among citizens with our judicial system.
Quick math question, that 84% is 84% of the actual voters, not 84% of the registered voters, right?
What it is, it's you take this top statewide office, how many people vote there, and then how many people are still hanging around to vote, let's say on the Supreme Court retention.
But the
percentage of actual ballots cast.
That is correct. So take 2008 when we had our last gubernatorial election. You compare the gubernatorial vote with the vote on the Supreme Court retention, and we only had a 17% roll-off. 2010, we only had a 16% roll-off, which is very, very good compared to what happens in other states.
Again, to be clear, if 1,000 people vote in the governor's race, and that's the top race on the ballot.
Right.
840 of them are hanging around to vote in the retention race.
That is correct, which is very high compared to what
number has gone up consistently.
It has.
Since this process has been.
It has, and it's much higher than other states are experiencing. So we feel good about keeping our voters informed and having them involved in these elections.
And Dale, you would agree with what Don said a long time ago, that we have good judges. That's the reason we're not seeing a lot of throw the bones out votes.
Oh, absolutely. The Missouri plan is working, and I think every criteria that you use that's based on merit factors confirms that.
Because your critics would say it clearly isn't working, or we'd have more throw-the-bums-out votes.
Well, if they look at one ideological issue, one case, they can choose to vote however they want, but across the board, if you look at all the kinds of disputes that our judges deal with, they're non-ideological, non-controversial, they're just applying the law to the facts 400,000 times every year, and they're doing a heck of a job doing that.
Yeah,
we believe.
It's probably something to be fun to talk about, but you know, a lot of people bemoan our low voter turnout, and there's some political scientists that argue, hey, that's a sign of health in your political system because people are content. And I would argue the same. I don't know if I buy that entirely, but with judges, I do. I mean, if people are sticking around 84% of the time to vote, and they're voting at a high rate to retain, I think people are generally happy with the judicial system in Missouri, especially when it comes to judges.
And Don, I came in late, so remind me how to spell your last name.
There you go.
I didn't get that. Okay. Thanks.